ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, Tegan Taylor here from Life Matters. When you think of grandparents, what comes to mind? Maybe a secret stash of lollies? Well, grandparents aren't just spoiling the grandkids anymore. They're raising them and paying the bills. This July on Radio National, The Grandparent Trap explores the joys and pressures of being a modern grandparent. The Grandparent Trap and much more on Life Matters. Search for Life Matters on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every evening in Israel, one television news bulletin stands out.
Channel 13 is now one of very few Israeli outlets prepared to air criticisms of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
But now that broadcaster's future could be in jeopardy after the government rejected a key ruling by Israel's Supreme Court.
These are dangerous times for both the judiciary and the independent media. I'm Kylie Morris.
And I'm Laura Tingle. On this episode of Global Roaming, we're asking, has Israel entered an unprecedented constitutional crisis?
Now, Laura, you're recently returned from Israel, and I'm guessing this story is something that came across your radar there. Give us a bit of the background.
Yes, Kylie. I was really interested while I was in Israel to sort of see how Israelis saw the world and their own actions, the government's own actions. And I have to say, it doesn't necessarily bear a lot of resemblance to the way we see what's going on in the world. So I was talking to a few people about, you know, what's going on there and this story of the Netanyahu government's various attempts to stymie debate and intimidate journalists. And this story has sort of escalated quite considerably over the past week because there was a declaration by the Netanyahu government that it was just going to ignore a court ruling which ultimately goes to the question of who can own Channel 13, which is the television station which is the most outspoken critic of the government in Israel.
So there are two problems, Laura, right? So firstly, what the government is doing, i.e. kind of leaning on the scales about who can control or who can own a television station, but also how it's doing it. So what it's doing in terms of defying the ruling of the courts.
That's right. And most internal analysts and people within the political system, even the Israeli president, have bought in on this because whatever the implications for the ownership of the media, it's basically the government saying, oh, well, we'll just ignore the court. And Isaac Herzog, the Israeli president, has even said, look, this is crossing a red line. You can't do this. So it's not clear what's going to happen to the underlying question of what happens to Channel 13 and this particular ruling. But it also, you know, does reflect on this sort of question of the ongoing assault on the judicial system by the Netanyahu government as well.
To better understand this, I'm pleased to say we're talking today to Anat Saragusti. She's a peace activist and the director of press freedom at the Union of Journalists in Israel. She was Israel's first female war photographer and is a former reporter and news editor. She argues that this latest development is in fact part of Benjamin Netanyahu's pursuit of a master plan to destroy press freedom in Israel. She joins us now.
Anat Saragusti, welcome to Global Roaming. For those coming to the issue of this constitutional standoff between the government and the Supreme Court, can you take us back to what this controversy began with?
Yeah, this is part of the attempts of the current government to take over control on the free media, mainly the free press in the country, to decide who would own what channel. In this particular case, the second commercial television in Israel, which is more liberal in its coverage and more critique towards the government in its coverage. What's pending, what's sitting on the table of this regulator is selling the channel to young Israelis who just did big exit in high tech to preserve its liberalism and in for the sake of democracy. This was their declaration. And obviously the government doesn't want that to happen. And so they were trying in different ways. And one of the ways is to take a political control on the regulator, on the nominations of the board of directors who have to approve this this deal. We at the Union of Journalists, we appealed to the High Court of Justice against three of the new members based on conflict of interest. And we're still waiting for the ruling of the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, the Minister of Communication decided anyway to nominate these people and to let them act. This is the government's attempt to take control on the selling of a private company from one private person to another private person.
So the overall impact has been that, in a technical sense, the court has said that the regulator could keep operating without these extra people that the government wanted to appoint. And in essence, the government has said, well, we don't care what you say, Supreme Court, we're going to defy that declaration, which seems to be what people think is this constitutional crisis, in that the government's just saying, we don't care what the courts say. I mean, there was actually an extraordinary quote from, I think, the Justice Minister saying the law has to apply to everybody, which he was talking about in terms of the court.
Exactly. And as I said, it's a private entity that is being sold to a private group of people.
But it's a clear signal, really, isn't it? I mean, the Netanyahu government has had such a widespread attack on the media and on the judicial system over the last few years. So it reinforces that point. But what would it mean for Channel 13 and the general sort of spectrum of views in Israeli media if Channel 13 was effectively silenced?
Oh, wow. Well, this is a part of a much bigger plan to destroy and silence the independent journalism in the country, the independent press in the country. They have a master plan. I mean, this is only one and maybe small chapter in this master plan, but the master plan contains a lot of dimensions. And they have a tsunami of legislations now on the table of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, targeting the public broadcaster. They want to shut it down. They want to cut the budget. They want to shut to close only the news division, I mean, the journalism. You have to understand that Israel is a very small country and we speak a very unique language. So the market is very small. Currently, we have the public broadcaster, which is very strong. The legislation that formed it is very strong, so they find it very hard to break it down. And then we have two small commercial televisions, and we have two news channels on cable, which both of them belong to people who are great supporters of Prime Minister Netanyahu. And the content is completely aligning with the ideology of the government. So they completely support them. One of them is engaged mainly in conspiracy theories, lies, fake news, hammering the opposition, hammering democratic values, etc., etc. And this is the only place that Prime Minister Netanyahu went for interviews, quote unquote, in Hebrew. He did not give an interview in Hebrew to the Israeli media or journalist interview since March 21. We had wars, the disaster, the massacre of October 7th. He didn't give an interview, a journalist interview for the Israeli public, and gave endless of interviews in English for foreign press. This is a sign or something. It's very symbolic.
You've said what these kinds of channels that support Netanyahu are delivering to their audiences. But what is Channel 13 doing that makes it so valuable? Can you tell me, give me examples of a couple of stories perhaps that viewers would have seen on Channel 13 that have been revelatory, which they wouldn't have seen in any other way?
Okay, so first of all, this is the tone, you know, the tone of coverage. The talk shows are critique towards the government and very cynical. There was a very, very big investigative journalist piece on the Minister of Transportation and the way she manipulates the public money to cultivate her supporters. And this was done by one of the journalists in Channel 13 who's a red flag to the government. Channel 13 is very strong in covering the trial of Prime Minister Netanyahu. You have to understand that Prime Minister Netanyahu is obsessed by the coverage of the media, and he's on trial as we speak for corruption in terms of trying to manipulate or to bribe a media owner for a positive coverage of his and his family and his government. They interviewed witnesses in the trial and gave them stage to tell what was going on. So the coverage of this trial is very, very powerful in this channel. So they are considered to be hostile to the government. But they are not the only ones. I mean, Haaretz newspaper, which is very prominent in criticizing the government, and they imposed economic sanctions on Haaretz because of his editorial approach to the government. So it's not only Channel 13.
You're listening to Global Roaming with me, Kylie Morris, and Laura Tingle. We're speaking to Anat Saragusti. She's the Director of Press Freedom at the Union of Journalists in Israel. And we're talking about very difficult times, really, for the media in Israel and the steps the Netanyahu government is taking to control reporting around their policies.
So overall, I mean, there are two sort of separate but associated issues, I suppose, from an outsider's perspective. One of them is the incredible control that Israel has had over coverage of Gaza, and there's been a lot of international criticism of that. But I suppose what would be interesting to know is, what did and do Israelis know about what has happened in Gaza, and how is that portrayed in the domestic media?
Wow. This is a so important question. In a short, they know nothing. Unfortunately, the coverage of what's going on in Gaza in the other side of the conflict line, you can count on one hand the number of stories on mainstream media in Israel on Gaza, on the humanitarian crisis. The whole coverage in Gaza, and I exclude Haaretz newspaper because Haaretz was, and this is why Haaretz was targeted, because Haaretz was the only newspaper, and Haaretz is like, you can compare it to New York Times, The Times in London, you know, media like this. So Haaretz was covering the war in Gaza from day one, or from all its sides. All other mainstream media in Israel completely ignored what's going on the other side. They completely ignored the growing, developing humanitarian crisis there. There were very certain points during the, we're already 3 years of war, that they were, I mean, they felt that they have to deliver the news or at least cover something. And this was during the starvation, you know, the famine, because the whole world was covering it, because it was, you know, cover on any news magazine in the world in all the languages. So they didn't have a choice. But the way they covered it was, look what the world is seeing and look how the world is covering what's going on in Israel. And not only that, they published a kind of a formula, how many calories a person needs per day, how many trucks of food are going into Gaza per day, divided to the how many people are in Gaza, and then you can see that there is enough food for everybody, and the famine is completely based on the control of Hamas, and Hamas is stealing the food, and it's manipulating the prices, and it's selling it in a very high prices, so you cannot blame it on Israel. Same thing with the Gaza Humanitarian Fund that supposedly Israel established to distribute the food, and people were killed there trying to get some rice or sugar or flour or whatever. So they also, the Israeli media tend to show that Israel is you know, taking care of the citizens of Gaza in general. And I must tell you that there is no access to foreign press to Gaza since October 7th.
Anat, exactly on that point, I mean, we shouldn't neglect, should we, to talk about the numbers of journalists and media workers who've been killed by Israel in the Gaza war, but also more recently inside Lebanon. And as you say, foreign journalists generally aren't allowed into Gaza. So if the Netanyahu government is trying to shut down criticism within Israel, isn't that really simply consistent with its attitude elsewhere?
Yes, totally. It's trying, or the government is trying to control the narrative as much as they can. You know, what's going on? Look, Lebanon is a country that press can come from the north. It's easier in a way than Gaza is completely sealed. No one can enter Gaza. Israel now occupies 70% of the Gaza Strip. So 2 million people are concentrated in only 30% of the Gaza Strip. I've been to Gaza. I've been a journalist. I know Gaza very, very well. It's a very populated place. It was condensed to start with. Israel destroyed everything and uprooted all the greens on the woods, all the trees, everything. And, you know, before the ceasefire, journalists could enter Gaza only under the umbrella of the Israeli Defense Force spokesperson, who was to decide who gets in, for how long, in bed in what unit, who can be interviewed, you know, and everybody had to sign a waiver that allowed the IDF to go over the footage. And above all that, there is a layer of military censorship. So everything was very filtered, highly filtered. And now 200 and something journalists who were killed in Gaza were Palestinian journalists who were the only ones who could deliver the news to the world. Israel claimed that all of them, I think, or majority of them are Hamas militants. The Committee to Protect Journalists in New York are monitoring these killings of journalists. Lately, I mean, in the last week, I think, or so, Hamas started to publish the names of their militants who were killed in combat, and some of them were among the list of the journalists. So I guess that some of the journalists were Hamas militants. I don't know what it means exactly. But even the Committee to Protect Journalists published that and said that they are rechecking the names in their list. So it's only fair to say that. We know that they were target killed a few journalists during the war, and this was obvious. And we issued a declaration about that. They target killed journalists in Lebanon. We know that too. It's very dire. I mean, it's unbearable that 2 million people are completely sealed from the world and very few humanitarian aids workers can go into Gaza and work there.
So, Anat, Gaza's sealed off and there's very little coverage there. But coming back to Israel, in a way, even in these modern times of modern communications, it feels like what you're saying is the Israeli public are sealed off from a lot of information because of the either self-censorship or controls on the media there. What does that bode for the forthcoming elections in October?
Wow. These are the most existential elections for the state of Israel. Really, these elections will decide whether we are completely taken by the populist and democratic forces in the country, or do we save the remains of our liberal democracy. You know, the country is so polarized and so split, and the fact that there are different media coverage, sometimes opposite in the way they cover and the rhetoric and the wording, cultivate the polarization within the country. Because on one hand, you can see that we, I mean, objectively lost in all the fronts that Netanyahu led us to. You know, we lost in Iran because now we are out of the room altogether. We don't decide anything. We lost in Gaza because Gaza is still boiling and we may have to go fight there again because Hamas was not disarmed. We lost in Lebanon. We destroyed large parts of southern Lebanon, and Hezbollah was not disarmed, and no one is able to disarm Hezbollah, so we lost there. We lost against, you know, the small terrorist group, the Houthis in Yemen. We didn't solve this thing. They are still, you know, threatening us, whatever. And the country is devastated, devastated. We are in a huge post-trauma, all of us. And there is an inner front here against all the gatekeepers. As you said in the beginning, you know, the legal system, the courts, the independent press. So everything feeds into the election campaign, because Netanyahu tries to say, the other day he was interviewed, by, quote unquote, in this Channel 14 that completely supports him, claiming that we are winning, that Iran was destroyed, that the nuclear program of Iran was destroyed, that they had, and he don't care lying. He said that Iran already obtained nuclear bombs, and it was only Israel operation, military operation, that managed to destroy these nuclear bombs, which was a complete lie. Plus, you know, the rhetoric of the populist claiming that we are the people and we have to decide and we have to rule. And who are these justices who were not elected to decide what we can do and what we cannot do? I mean, this is the essence of the whole populist claim. So it really is existential. Everything feeds into this election campaign.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, though it doesn't sound like there's necessarily going to be a change, even if Benjamin Netanyahu goes off the scene. Annette Saragusti, thank you so much for talking to Global Roaming today.
Thank you for having me.
So that was Annette Saragusti, a peace activist and the director of press freedom at the Union of Journalists in Israel, speaking to us from there. Laura, I mean, it's troubling, isn't it, in the sense that there are layers to this story and this moment that Anat described, which really reveal a fairly dire situation around press freedom at a critical moment, right, with an existential election only a few months away.
Indeed. And I also spoke to Anat when I was in Israel a month or two ago, and we discussed some of these things. And the more layers of it that you see about what the Netanyahu government has done to the media there, it is quite chilling. I mean, she mentioned some of these things. Basically, they've tried to affect the board of the public broadcaster Khan. They've tried to impose a thing where it can only get budget funding once a year, so it's very uncertain. You can imagine what that would be like at the ABC. It's put in various favours for Channel 14, which is the sort of really ultra-nationalist station that she discussed, which means that they don't have to be subjected to regulations on fairness in their reporting. Of course, they also closed down Al Jazeera in Israel. They're proposing to close down the public radio broadcaster, the Israeli Army Radio, as well as taking legal actions against another channel, Channel 12, and all these sanctions that she mentioned on Haaretz, the newspaper. And as she also mentioned, this poisonous campaign against journalists, where there's all this harassment and intimidation of journalists, billboards. Channel 12 was attacked the other day because it had run footage of Israeli soldiers assaulting a Palestinian prisoner. So it's pretty extraordinary. But I think that the particularly depressing part of this, really, Kylie, is that it's not clear that it would necessarily change with the departure of Benjamin Netanyahu. I mean, without a doubt, these latest changes where the government is defying what the courts are saying about what should happen about this board which can regulate the ownership of Channel 13 really has brought out some fascinating divisions. Like the Israeli president has come out and said, look, this is a red line. You've crossed the red line. You can't just ignore what the courts say. The opposition's attacked it. But whether there is now such a intolerance for internal dissent is the big question mark, I think, for Israel in the lead up to this election.
And the truth is that Benjamin Netanyahu has form when it comes to controlling the judiciary. I mean, that's something that we've already seen mass protests in Israel over. So to see him returning to, you know, a direct government intervention into a kind of non-governmental sphere to try and tip the scales in favour of his own actions so that they are, you know, broadly spoken about positively is, you know, very troubling, I'm sure, for all of those Israelis who marched over judicial kind of overreach by Netanyahu before.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's troubling. The protests stopped after October 7 and the various proposals were also put on the shelf, but they've been revived in more recent times. And of course, one of the unifying things across the political spectrum in Israel, if you talk to people there, is that they all hate Benjamin Netanyahu for a variety of different reasons. But without a doubt, the cynicism that he is doing all of these things, whether it's having a war, you know, trying to clamp down on the judiciary, attacking the media, that is all seen as part of his attempts essentially to stay out of jail because he's up on these corruption charges, and that whole inquiry into his corruption charges keeps getting delayed because of the war in Gaza and now more recently the war in Lebanon.
Yes, high stakes on every front, really, when it comes to this issue. Of course, I would say Israel is not the only, or the Israeli government is not the only government in the world that tries to exercise control over the media. I mean, Donald Trump has faced similar accusations, but I think given the attacks against the judiciary at the same time and the fact that Israel is now kind of knee-deep in several wars, certainly everything feels that much more, yeah, that much more sharply edged than perhaps it does in other places.
Well, more sharply edged, particularly since they keep insisting that they're the only democracy in the Middle East. But there we go.
We are interested, as always, in your questions and your feedback. We always love hearing from you. global.roaming@abc.net.au.
And thanks to producer Aston Brown, supervising producer Pat Sunderland, and executive producer Laura McAuliffe.
Thanks so much. See you, Laura.
See you, Carly.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.